One industry that has long understood climate change and its risk is the insurance business. After all, they are on the hook for extreme events. And it turns out you can buy a policy to insure nature, as in a coral reef in Mexico. Let's tell you about the first of its kind. Last year, Hurricane Delta slammed the Mesoamerican reef in Quintana Roo, Mexico. And in a jiffy, local officials got a check for $850,000. So, how's this work? Michael Beck is research professor at UC Santa Cruz and former lead marine scientist at the Nature Conservancy, and he's now doing field work in the Bahamas, so he joins us from there. Mike, thanks for taking a little time away to be with us.
Hi, Scott. Glad to be here.
Now, let's talk about this reef in Mexico. It is the second largest in the world after the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. You've been going there for more than 30 years. What is the climate impact?
Well, you're seeing really strong impacts to the reef there. I've been going there, as you said, since 1988, and the reef was in incredible shape then. But it's been facing many kinds of challenges: ocean warming, pollution, coastal development. So we've been losing quite a bit of the coral cover and the reef structure. So you have this reef that's been secreting all of this limestone over decades and centuries, and it's growing up this wall, and it's got a thin living skin of coral on top of it. And that's all the color that you see on a reef. As that reef dies, you're losing that topmost corals, maybe a meter, sometimes 2 meters of coral at the top, but you're still preserving at least some of the underlying structure. And that's really important because reefs break waves. And the taller the reef is, the more waves they break and the less flooding that there is on shore.
Okay, so let's talk about this insurance experiment. I understand the Nature Conservancy is teamed up with the insurance giant Swiss Re and some other parties. Give us the basics of how this insurance works.
Well, the core of insurance like this is to understand, what's the likelihood of damage to reefs from storms? And we have some understanding of the relationship between wind speed and wave height and the damage to these reefs. And so you're developing a policy that recognizes when storms reach certain intensities, they're going to damage reefs, and we're going to need some sort of access to funding to be able to quickly repair them.
Right. And so I guess as far as this insurance policy, who paid for the policy? And then after Hurricane Delta came, how quickly did the money come?
Yeah, so there are a variety of parties who are paying into the insurance policy per se. That includes the Conservancy, who has interests in preserving the reef, the government, because it's important for lives and livelihoods, the protections that the reefs offer, as well as other businesses. So those are the folks paying in. The money in this instance came in about 20 days, is my understanding. And this is really important because we've got about 2 weeks or a little bit more to do some of the most important work to recover those reefs.
So tell us a little bit about how that quick recovery went. I understand very quickly dive instructors went down, fishermen, researchers. In this case, you think it went well?
Well, I think the first phase of that did go very well and as planned. And then you've got the harder and longer work of then assessing, are there areas where we lost corals that we weren't able to put them back quickly? And so we need to do further reef restoration work.
Yeah. And finally, I do want to ask another question on these reefs around the world. My jaw dropped when I read that up to 90% of coral reefs could be damaged by 2040. For the rest of us, how urgent is this problem?
Well, I think the problem is really urgent. We showed in our work that if we lose just the topmost meter of reefs, the costs of storms are going to double. Reefs are really effective at protecting us. They reduce 97% of the wave energy that would otherwise impact coastlines. So we've got to act quickly to make sure that we preserve those living corals on the top of our natural seawalls.
That's Michael Beck. He's research professor at the Institute of Marine Sciences at UC Santa Cruz. Michael, thanks for your insights.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, we just heard about coral reef insurance in Mexico. It's an example of what is called parametric insurance. To translate and explain how it can help people after natural disasters, we have Carolyn Kuski, Executive Director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Carolyn, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, parametric insurance, right, a mouthful. How is it different from standard insurance? Say, hurricane comes, an insurance company sends an adjuster to my home, assesses the damage, and eventually, someday, they might decide to send me a check.
Exactly. With a parametric policy, the payout is only related to some independent measure of the disaster itself. So the amount you get might be based on how fast the winds were blowing at a particular location or when a flood gauge reaches a certain stage. So it's not related to your damage, which might make you wonder why you'd be interested in such a policy. But there are a number of advantages.
I see. Okay, right. And so the advantages here to this kind of insurance are what?
Yeah, so there's essentially two big advantages. The first is that the payout can be made much faster. So anyone who's argued with their insurance company about how much they're owed knows that loss adjustment process can take a while, and it can slow down getting the financial resources that people need for their recovery. With one of these parametric products, since it's some observable measure of the hazard that can be undertaken immediately, payouts can be made in a matter of days. So that's benefit number one.
So automatic, the insurance company doesn't need to send anybody out. They just look and say, we just had a 80 mile per hour, 100 mile per hour, whatever the agreed upon magnitude that was triggered, then the payout is triggered.
Exactly. So it's fast and hopefully pretty easy.
So how is it being used now in parts of the world that perhaps seem promising to you, perhaps farmers or for people who live in hurricane areas?
Yeah, I think there's two uses that have shown to be really helpful. One, as you said, is to help lower income groups and others who are traditionally locked out of insurance markets get access to coverage. Because of these efficiencies, the transaction costs of these policies are a lot lower. And so you can write smaller policies. So often with traditional insurance, it's not profitable to write small policies for lower coverage amounts. But with parametric insurance, you can. So yes, it's been used around the world for small landholders, livestock owners, for actually a range of types of losses. And we're just now starting to see that come to the U.S.
So how about in this country? I understand you're working on a pilot.
Yeah, so we're working on a pilot in New York City with the Mayor's Office of Climate Resiliency and the Center for New York City Neighborhoods. And the idea is to help bring some of these models to the U.S. to help with the disaster recovery of low and moderate income families here. And the way we're structuring this is not as a direct-to-household type of insurance policy like we've been talking about, but something that's referred to actually as a mezzo insurance policy, so more jargon. But the basic idea is that the Center for New York City Neighborhoods, this NGO, is going to purchase a parametric insurance policy itself. And so when a big flood comes, it will trigger this policy. And then the Center for New York City Neighborhoods will have the money to make emergency cash grants to households in need after a flood event.
So what are the challenges of this kind of disaster parametric insurance? I imagine some people, as you said, they can't afford it. Some people perhaps may assume, you know, the government is going to take care of me, so why buy it?
Yeah, and we know that actually at any income level, it's really hard to get people to want to buy insurance for disasters. They seem unlikely when it's a lovely day outside. And also, insurance is a really not a fun product to buy. It's something that you buy and you hope you never have to use. And nobody likes that, right? So it's very difficult to motivate people to think about if this worst case happens, that it's important to have that financial protection. We know that people tend to be too optimistic about these things, unfortunately leaving them exposed when the disaster does occur.
Carolyn Kuski, Executive Director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Carolyn, thanks very much.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.